This is Radio Superior 1944, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1944. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now into the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the Great Lakes station, KUWS. Jack McKenna saying, if you go faster than the victory speed of 35 miles per hour, you'll slow the war effort. It's 6 p.m. Standard Wartime, Friday, December 22nd, 1944. Lou Martin is standing by with the latest from the battle raging in Western Europe. Morgan Murphy is in with today's editorial, and museum curator Gerald Stowe will tell us about the first Christmas in Superior. Oh, yes. And we've got the best swing music around.
Check. One, two, check.
What on earth is that noise?
Oh, that's Engineer Joe's latest contraption. He calls it an intercommunication device. He's been playing with it for the last couple of days.
It's rather annoying.
Well, that's our Joe. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Builder Supply Company at 619 Tower Avenue. Builder Supply has Christmas presents for kiddies and grown-ups. Good evening, Lou.
That Lou thinks he's so hot because he's a newsman.
Joe doesn't realize his new contraption allows us to hear him, but he can't hear us.
Yes, well, good evening, listeners. The German drive across Belgium may have been halted by the Allies, but Nazi troops continue to make gains in Luxembourg. Even so, the home front is aroused by this war setback, which began 1 week ago. We begin our World Shortwave Radio Roundup with Harrison Salisbury in Paris.
This is France. Harrison Salisbury, your correspondent. Today's frontline reports say American First Army troops, in desperate fighting, have stopped the German drive across Belgium. Even so, it appears the dangerous Nazi thrust across neighboring Luxembourg continues. In this moment of crisis, Supreme Commander Dwight D. Eisenhower called on his men to rise to new heights and turn Hitler's, quoting now, great gamble into his worst defeat, unquote. In his order of the day to American troops, General Eisenhower left no doubt this great battle of the West is the crisis which will determine whether Germany will be crushed quickly or whether the war will be prolonged. As his dramatic order was flashed to grim-faced American GIs, the first encouraging report since the Nazi thrust was launched December 16th was wirelessed by United Press war correspondent Jack Frankish. Frankish is with the First Army headquarters in Belgium. He reports that the Germans have been stopped cold for the first time since this battle began. He says they are 35 miles into their advance near Bastogne, 60 miles from Brussels and 14 miles from Malmedy. But Frankish also reports word from retreating GIs that the Germans are not bypassing the small town of Amblev, and a fierce fight is underway. General Courtney Hodges' First Army is bearing the brunt of this onslaught. It is now a matter of whether he can be reinforced with both weapons, ammunition, and fighting men. In Paris, this is Harrison Salisbury, calling the States. Come in, Washington.
This is Washington. Lyle C. Wilson reporting. The grinding fury of the German winter offensive resounded across the ocean today. It is driving home to Americans the grim prospect of a really long war. American war workers who turn out the ammunition used by Allied troops against the Nazi hordes know their job is far from done. It is clear they have a whale of a job to replace the equipment and ammunition used. American civilians as a whole are also being told that they will have to continue to get along without a lot of things they have been missing. Still another possibility, the extent depending on the casualties on the front lines in this Battle of the Bulge, is that draft calls will grow in size. War production chairman J.A. Krug says the force of this German drive may mean re-equipping the whole of General Courtney Hodges' First Army. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson. Come in, Soviet Russia.
This is Soviet Russia calling. Eddie Gilmore in Moscow. A major Red Army offensive has been launched near the Baltic. The Soviets are hurling 27 divisions, possibly 400,000 troops, into a battle in the northern section of the Eastern Front of Latvia. The offensive appears to be an all-out attempt to liquidate tens of thousands of German troops trapped against the Baltic Sea. If the Russian army succeeds, it will free thousands of troops for the other Soviet offensive in East Prussia and Poland. For this, the Russians are massing a great number of men, tanks and equipment for a campaign that is expected to conclude the war. Observers confidently expect when the Red Army hits the fortified German lines from East Prussia to the Carpathians, they will break through to Germany in fast successive operations. In Moscow, this is Eddie Gilmore. Calling the Central Pacific, come in the Philippines.
This is the Philippines on the front lines of the Omak Valley. Daryl Berrigan, your correspondent. American forces closed a nutcracker on Leyte Island's shattered Yamashita line. 77th Infantry and the 1st Dismounted Cavalry Division joined forces here in the once Japanese fortified Omak Valley. Amongst these defeated fortifications lay the dead of almost 2,500 Nipponese soldiers. That brings the seven-day count to 11,327 enemy slain. General Douglas MacArthur's communique of the day says remnants of Jap forces are desperately but futilely trying to cut their way out to the northwestern corner of Leyte. To the north, 11 more Jap fighter planes were knocked out in dogfights over the newly completed airdrome on Mindoro Island. Mindoro is just 150 miles from still-occupied Manila. This is terribly significant in several ways. First, U.S. bombers are already able to attack Japan from Saipan, taken earlier this year. But secondly, this new Mindoro airstrip is only half an hour's bombing run to Manila. This will tighten the screws on the shrinking Jap empire. Meanwhile, we're told from Pacific HQ that B-29s from Saipan are bombing an island 750 miles south of Japan called Iwo Island. In the Omak Valley of the Philippines, this is Daryl Berrigan, calling France. Come in, Normandy.
This is the coast of France, Stan Turner reporting. Though the rumble of guns again blot out the traditional Christmas message of peace on earth, soldiers here are doing their utmost to observe the spirit of the fourth wartime Christmas. Unless actually pinned down by gunfire, some GIs here are in a fight of their lives. Servicemen are due a turkey dinner with all the fixings. If they are on the front lines, they will get their turkey once they are relieved. Even American prisoners of war, at least those in Germany, will have turkey, canned turkey. The Quartermaster Corps began canning and shipping the traditional Christmas bird 6 months ago through the International Red Cross. American home folks have showered G.I. Joe with gifts. At last count, 50 million holiday packages have been sent to soldiers overseas, the greatest mass movement of packages to leave the United States. In playing Santa Claus, the Army Postal Service is using every conceivable type of transportation. That includes Arctic dog teams, desert camels, jeeps, ducks, weasels, and parachutes. And soldiers here are buying foreign goods and sending those back to friends and family stateside. Out in the fleet, men on the bigger warcraft, provided they are not in dangerous combat areas, will cluster on the fantail Christmas Eve and hear carols sung by ship choruses. Some even have Christmas trees set up in crew quarters in the shape of palms. In every case, they all pray that this will be the last wartime Christmas. In France, this is Stan Turner speaking.
President Roosevelt called newspaper columnists unnecessary excredence on our civilization in a meeting with reporters today. When it was pointed out that he had a columnist in the family, Mr. Roosevelt laughed with reporters and said that his wife's column is the exception. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has these words from Builder Supply.
I assume excredence is not a good thing. Well, let's move into something that's good. Christmas is only 3 shopping days away, folks. Here's some bargains from Builder Supply to help you out. For the kiddies, hey, a set of drums, won't they sound great on Christmas morning? Boom Boom Drums for just 49 cents. Games they can play for 27 cents up. How about soldiers' suits, eh? Bang, bang. $1.88. How about that? And there's lots more for the kids, too, including stuffed dogs for $1.50. Woof, woof. And how about ironing boards for Mama, huh? Just $3.75. We can't leave her out. And toolboxes for Dad, up from $2.75. And silver-plated silverware, just $6.50 for a set. Oh, boy, that goes on and on. Large, massive armchairs, just $19.95, and you'll be comfortable. Builder Supply Company, 619 Tower Avenue in Superior. Better get there soon. The Luthians are welcome, too.
The 6,000-ton cargo ship, the MV Pinellas, plunged into the ice-flecked waters of Superior Bay this afternoon at the Globe Shipyards. Globe Shipbuilding has been awarded contracts for two more cargo ships. The Globe president, Clarence Kampser, made that announcement at today's launching. The Maritime Commission's contract would mean another $3 million in work for Globe. Mr. and Mrs. Claude Koenig of Hewitt Avenue have been notified by the War Department that their son has been wounded in action. Private Claude Koenig was wounded November the 10th in Holland. He's been transferred to the Holleran Hospital on Staten Island. Private Koenig also received the Purple Heart for wounds received June the 7th in Normandy. Reverend and Mrs. F.M. Whitney of Ashland have been told that their son was wounded in fighting. Private First Class Frederick Whitney was injured December the 8th in Germany. He graduated from Ashland High School in 1941, later attended McAllister College in St. Paul and Northland College in Ashland. He entered the Army February of 1943. A nationally famous newspaper editorial cartoonist from Superior is featured in Coronet Magazine's January edition. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has more.
Good evening, Lou. The crusading crayon of Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist Daniel Fitzpatrick of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch has gotten national attention again. The Superior native is one of the few who has taken shots at big business, big power, and big politics without losing his job. The Coronet says Fitz draws what he pleases and prints what he draws. In the 20s, he fought prohibition. In the 30s, it was the high-handedness of big business. He fought appeasement to Nazi Germany and America's indifference to war. Ironically, he was kicked out of high school in Superior before leaving for the Chicago Art Institute. That's where he parked his elbows on easels and lived on beans and dreams. He drew some comic cartoons for the Chicago Daily News until he heard about an opening at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He got the job at the tender age of 22. Fitzpatrick's first week on the job, he attacked railroad interests and public utilities for holding up low-cost power in Missouri. That cost the Post-Dispatch some advertising money, but Fitz kept at it. He even spent time in jail in 1940 for criticizing a Missouri court for collaborating with local racketeers. He is well known for using the Nazi swastika as a juggernaut wheel of fascism that, like a dark version of Old Man River, just keeps rolling along. He won the Pulitzer Prize in 1926, but Daniel Fitzpatrick says he's most proud of the time he spent in jail in 1940, Lou.
A real fighter for the common man.
And the First Amendment.
And that's the news, Jack.
Ever been to jail, Lou?
Not that I would want to talk about on the air.
Oh, heck. I remember you were also opposed to prohibition. That's newsman Lou Martin, folks, with a dark and sordid past.
I do not have a dark and sordid past.
The forecast for this Friday night, December 22, 1944, very cold with strong winds diminishing. Clear skies tonight with blowing snow. The low will be at zero, folks, and the high tomorrow around 10, hoop-dee-doo. Let's kick off tonight's winter weather with this fine number by Claude Thornhill and his orchestra, and one of my favorites. It's his signature song, Snowfall, on the Martin and McKenna Show. Thank you. Claude Thornhill, and Snowfall on station KUWS. Christmas greetings tonight from the Tip Top Cab Company at 1701 Belknap in Superior. Dial just 6681 for a tip top. Larson Chevrolet also sends wishes for you and yours for a Merry Christmas from your friends at Larson Chevrolet. And more music now. Brand new from the 1944 hit parade for Fire Chief Olaf Sorensen. This is the Ink Spots, and I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire on the Martin and McKenna Show.
I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart. In my heart I have but one desire, and that one is you. No other will do. I've lost all ambition for worldly acclaim. I just want to be the one you love. And with your admission that you feel the same, I'll have reached the goal I'm dreaming of. Believe me, I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart.
I don't want to set the world on fire, honey. I love you too much. I just want to start a great big flame down in your heart. You see, way down inside of me, darling, I have only one desire, and that one desire is you, and I know nobody else ain't gonna do.
I've lost all ambition for worldly acclaim. I just want to be the one you love. And with your admission that you feel the same,
I'll have reached the goal I'm dreaming of. Believe me, I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart.
The Ink Spots by request on station KUWS.
I'll get this consarned thing to work yet. Oh, I shouldn't say consarned. Mother heard me to be a dose of cod liver oil for me. Yeah, but Mother isn't here, is she? No, I could...
Doesn't he know that we can hear him from his engineering room?
Loud. Okay. Let's see here. I don't want to set the world on fire.
Apparently not.
How do you shut it off? Try unplugging it.
A flame in my torch.
I already tried, Lou. It's all connected to the same wire. So I put the trash can over it.
I don't want to learn anything more disturbing about Joel than I have to. Now, let me welcome Superior Evening Telegram publisher Morgan Murphy.
I've lost all patience with electronic things. This will be rich, Mr. Know-It-All Newspaper Man.
Did you say something, Lou?
Well, yeah.
I need a thicker wastebasket. It's just some radio interference we've been getting lately. Something a good engineer would take care of.
Yes, of course. Today's editorial is about the post-war dream that may become the post-war disillusion. Thousands of Americans are dreaming of a new post-war home complete with miraculous gadgets and modern comforts. These are things we didn't dare dream about during the 1930s Depression times. But now, a poll of Americans done by the National Association of Home Builders says most people are expecting to build that vision within 2 years, bolstered by a nice nest egg of war bonds. Sad to say, the Home Builders Association is going to have to burst that bubble.
Darn home builders. Who do they think they are? Wearing tool belts like big shots, anyway. Get an engineer where they've got lots of pencils in their shirt pocket.
I think there's a voice coming from somewhere.
Just static, Mr. Murphy.
I wonder what static they're talking about.
just one of those things?
Anyway, the home builders say people are expecting to put $1,000 down on a $5,000 house with 8 rooms, a full basement, and 2 bathrooms. They are also expecting monthly mortgage payments of $50. On top of that, this dream house includes air conditioning, movable walls, and blow air heating. No more cold furnaces.
Sounds like a lot of hot air blowing in that studio, by golly.
Continue, Mr. Murphy.
The trouble is, the Home Builders Association says the price of raw materials are, shall we say, going through the roof.
Home builders going through the roof? Good one!
And the visions of electronic self-cooking kitchens and other gadgets just don't exist, not yet.
Pish posh. Have some faith, man. We'll have robots doing that work in no time. Leave it up to engineers to get the job done.
You know, that static keeps commenting on my commentary.
It's,
one of those things.
Point being, don't expect a building boom after the war. Recovery from war takes time. Keep buying those war bonds, but keep the dreams realistic.
Thank you, Morgan Murphy, publisher of the Superior Evening Telegram. Play music, Jack.
Morgan Murphy? What kind of name is that? I'm hungry for M&Ms for some reason.
Right. Here's Bing Crosby, folks, with the Andrews Sisters and Pistol Pack and Mama on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol Pack and Mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, drinking beer in a cabaret, was I having fun? Until one night she caught me right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol Pack and Mama, lay that pistol down. Every night, Bing, and I'll woo you every day. I'll be your regular mama, and I'll put that gun away.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe. Lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama. Lay the thing down before it goes off and hurts somebody. Oh, she kicked out my windshield, and she hit me over the head. She cussed and cried and said I'd lied, and she wished that I was dead.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down. We're 3 tough gals from deep down Texas way. We got no pals, they don't like the way we play. We're a rough, rootin', tootin', shootin' trio, but you've seen my sister Cleo. She's a terror, make no error, but there ain't no lassie fair. Is what we tell her.
Lay that pistol down, babe. Lay that pistol down. Pistol back and mama. Lay that pistol down.
Slow, so now they know you can't do that to Maine.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe. Lay that pistol down.
Pistol pack and mama.
Lay that pistol down. Oh, singing songs in a cabaret. Was I having fun? Till one night it didn't seem right. Now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe. Lay that pistol down, pistol pack and mama, lay that pistol
down.
Oh, pistol pack and mama, lay that pistol.
That's the Vic Shane Orchestra with Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters on station KUWS. We have another guest, Lou. Joe's new contraption will get us into trouble.
We're in a fix.
Just pretend we don't hear anything.
Just pretend, and it will go away? What are we, children?
Always the newsman. You never did like playing make-believe.
We have a special guest, Douglas County Museum Curator, Gerald Stowe.
Yes, hello, Mr. Martin. Oh, and Mr. McKenna. Yes.
Sheesh, it's that spooky guy. You know, he does wear a nice cape, though.
What? What is that I hear?
What is what? We don't hear any strange voices.
Smooth cover-up, Jack. Mr. Stowe, you have news about the first Christmas in West Superior?
Oh, yes, yes. The first Christmas in 1884, 60 years ago. It seems like yesterday.
You're talking as if you were there. Don't do that. It creeps me out.
Yes. These are from documents at the Historical Society Records Library. I just talk that way, that's all. Yes, the winter moon gave a silvery radiance to that dreary hamlet December 25th, 1884. We were ushering in what we called the Christian Feast of the Nativity. Yes, and with it came the birth of West Superior. You could say it was the great birth of the City of Destiny. There were few buildings then. They were at W.B. Webb's, the first house built in Superior. So we were in the virgin house of this new virgin city.
Can he say that on the radio?
That guy! He sure talks funny.
What was that? Who said that?
We didn't hear anybody laughing.
Please continue, Mr. Stowe.
Yes. Around Mr. Webb's hospitable table were R.B. Deere, Frank Deere, Tim Hayes, and Tim McPherson. It was a hard time with scant rations, little money, loneliness, illness, and little to amuse these pioneers. There were no paved roads or mail deliveries in the winter. But wait, yes, we did have a sleigh ride that day. Old Man Shaw was the stage driver. He fashioned a horse and sled, yes. Yes. Oh, and people came from Central Park to join in. Yes, and afterwards, we basked in the glow of each other's company, playing cards. Yes, we played 7-Up. I won.
You won?
Yes. That brotherhood of those days warmed a body's heart in the spirit of the holiday.
Holiday? Oh, I've got to get presents for Mother and Fluffy yet. Oh, man.
I heard it again. I must go.
He'd better get out while the getting's good.
Yes, Master. I'm coming.
Nope. Don't hear a thing.
Yes. And Merry Christmas to you all.
See you, Jerry. See? It worked.
The guy is scared. He thinks he's hearing voices.
Here's a fine voice just for you good listeners. This is Larry Clinton with B. Wayne and Deep Purple on the Martin and McKenna Make-Believe Show.
The
Larry Clinton, his orchestra, and Deep Purple on station KUWS.
Now, if I stick this wire in here, okay, wrap this tape around this, okay, take out my gum and stick it right out.
We should tell Joe that everybody can hear him.
Yeah, right after we find out what he's up to.
I'm going to Joe's shop.
Dog, dig, neb, copper rationing? We engineers need to join together to protest this shortage. Next time we get together for Parcheesi or Old Maid, I like Old Maid better, but those WEBC engineers like Parcheesi. Not that it matters. I still beat them hands down. But if I were elected Big Cheese in charge, I'd say less Parcheesi from the Big Cheese. And they think McKenna's got all the funny lines. What a sense of humor. Looks, personality, great hips. I'm the whole package, ladies. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the handsomest engineer of them all?
Hey, Joe.
Oh, hiya, Lou. What brings you to my lab? Hey, watch out for that.
I guess you don't have too many guests in your shop.
Forgive the mess. Just slide that cable over next to the conductor box, and there you go. Have yourself a seat.
Let me just turn up the radio a bit.
What's going on? How come we got feedback on the air? Why am I hearing me on the air?
It's that intercommunication box of yours. We can hear you.
And how long have you been listening?
Don't worry, not long.
Oh, that's a relief. Yeah, that could be embarrassing.
Although we have to agree, you've got great hips.
I think it's best you disconnect your invention, at least for the time being.
Yeah, sure. But one day this intercom box, as I call it, will make me famous.
Well, that's it, folks. Stay tuned to our Friday night lineup with Duffy's Tavern. Archie, the manager, speaking. Duffy ain't here. People are funny. And Amos and Andy. We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing. And Mr. Great Hips keeps us on the air. For Lou Martin, then, this is Jack McKenna reminding you that war bonds mean freedom.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1944, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Paul Guggenheimer plays foreign correspondent Daryl Berrigan. Other performances by John Munson, Don Hansen, Don Mason, Joel Anderson. All events reported on Radio Superior 1944 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Tony Jasmine, speaking. Good night.